Good evening and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And without further ado, we will have a volunteer read the declaration and give the announcements.
Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves, by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. To carry out the purposes of this declaration, we here in Philadelphia carry on several meetings per week. We have a program such as on a Wednesday evening. The lodge opens at 5:15 and the library is open from 5:15 to 7:15 for individual study, for your own personal pursuits, or if you care to come here so that you can study and prepare for the topic for the meeting, there's plenty of opportunity in the library. This is a reference library with all straight-line theosophical literature available, plus other literature. So after the library hours, we have the study class here from 7:30 to 8:30. Currently, we're studying the ocean of theosophy. We're studying reincarnation. There's also a book table here, which carries all straight-line theosophical literature for purchase and for use at home, and we sell it at cost to the lodge. If you prefer to go online, pretty much all of our literature in the lodge can be found online that could be purchased from the book table, and online it's available for free. So you can get the website from the student at the book table. So that's Wednesday evening. Then on Friday evening, from 7:15 to 9:15, again, the library is open for talk and discussion on general fundamental principles of theosophy. So if you're a new person and care to come and ask questions and participate in such a discussion, you're certainly welcome. Then on Sundays, the doors open at 10:30 and we have a more formal presentation. The presentation is from 11 a.m. to 12 noon. And each month we pick a particular umbrella topic to examine through through each Sunday of the month. And this month, the month of February, that umbrella topic is Nobel and Noble Theosophical Voices, where we have talks on several different Nobel laureates who led what we would say is an exemplary theosophical life, whether they know it or not. So this Sunday is the last of Sunday in February, and the talk will be on Dr. Albert Schweitzer, a polymath. So the lodge is open to everyone. All our meetings are open to all and are free. That said, the lodge is sustained, of course, entirely by voluntary efforts of time, service, and money, and any contributions that anyone is willing to offer is certainly gratefully received, but there is no obligation imposed or implied.
So, after several weeks of talking about reincarnation, we are beginning chapter 11 tonight on karma. And it is the twin doctrine. So we will have a student summarize and take questions, comments, etc. at this time.
Chapter 11. Karma. An unfamiliar word for Western ears. Ceaseless in its operation, it bears alike upon planets, systems of planets, races, nations, families, and individuals. It is the twin doctrine to reincarnation. No spot or being in the universe is exempt from the operation of karma. All are under its sway, punished for error, by it yet beneficently led on through discipline, rest, and reward to the distant heights of perfection. Embraces once our physical and moral being. And the word, the Sanskrit term is karma, was adopted to designate it. Applied to man's moral life, it is the law of ethical causation, justice, reward, and punishment, the cause for birth and rebirth, yet equally the means for escape from reincarnation. Effects flow from cause, action and reaction. Every thought and act where act literally means is action. Theosophy views the universe as an intelligent whole. Hence, every motion in the universe is an action of that whole leading to results, which themselves become part causes for further results. it is not a being, but it's a law. The universal law of harmony, which unerringly restores all disturbances to equilibrium. So the God, the separateness, selfish objects, darkness, and all that is constant destruction going on in and around us. A continuous war among men and everywhere through the whole solar system, causing sorrow in all directions. Where does the hope lie? And the idea of justice and envy, rich, poor, opportunity, capacity, why them? Why death? Why affliction? But it states ancient truth that each man is the maker and fashioner of his own destiny, the only one who sets in motion the cause for his own happiness and misery. In one life he sows, and in the next he reaps. Thus on and forever the law of karma leads him. Karma is a beneficent law, lowly, merciful, relentless, just. For true mercy is not favor, but impartial justice. And the idea of fate and destiny, this is not fatalism. Everything done in a former body and has consequences. St. Paul said, brethren, be not deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever man soweth, that shall he also reap. The effect is in the cause, and karma produces the manifestation, either the body, the brain, or the mind, furnished by reincarnation. Each one experiences the results of his own actions. Perform our acts and accompany with others always, and the acts put their underlying thoughts have relations always to other persons and to ourselves. No act is performed without a thought at its root, either at the time of performance or leading
up to it.
All right, and thoughts are, now the mind comes in. The thoughts are lodged in the mind. They are magnetic threads. They mesh the solar system. Various effects are brought out. The whole system to which this globe belongs is alive, conscious on every plane, though only in man showing self-consciousness comes into play, where to explain how the thought under the act in the life may cause results in this or the next birth. Karma has our thoughts or acts, is karma for thoughts and acts in prior lives may be coming to us. Production to the intensity of the thoughts will be the intensity and depth of the picture. And that photographic picture is what reappears, because that is electrical, magnetic, osmotic. And that's the reason for this idea of misshapen children at birth. Edward talks about an exactitude of justice that uh, that we often we see a deformed human being, but continuing the instance merely for the purpose of illustration, having a happy disposition and an excellent intellect, sound judgment, and very good moral quality. This very instance leads us to the conclusion that karma must be of several different kinds. So this operates in more than one department of our nature, our being. And then we'll find out what they are next week. We'll leave you in suspense.
Okay.
Truly, it's the great truth. Karma is we're putting into action our feelings, our consciousness. Yes.
We hear from time to time, and surely it's descended to us from generations of students, this one idea that in spite of living in a society where the whole sway of thought is in one direction, which is really not the theosophical outlook on life. The message is that if we hear these ideas and it strikes a chord in us, then probably we've been this is not the first lifetime that we've been studying it in, if we're just recognizing the truth of the ideas. How does karma play into that? Is that part of the karmic process?
Well, as was mentioned, the karma operates on many different levels, in many different ways. But it's action and reaction. It's cause, it's effect. The intensity of the cause is the intensity of the effect. On three planes, of thought, word, and deed. A ripple effect coming from within, outward, our own nature. We are producers of karma by how we interact with our environment. So you've been doing it for a long time, and it's just your nature. You've just never looked at it in this way, perhaps. But, you know, this little being that we have here for this incarnation, how can we use it to help each other? How can we spread an idea of unity and solidarity? And, you know, we identify with the highest in all of us.
Here's an example given on pages 92, and it runs to the top of 93. About the soul that's born into a terribly deformed body. And there are statements made that for sure in just the prior incarnation, such a soul did something awful in order to have to live through a deformed body. But isn't it also possible that a highly developed soul might assume a deformed body in order to serve a particular cause to uplift humanity? Can we be so decisive about somebody else's karma?
We can answer that one, maybe. It's like we all are creating whatever it is that's before us. And it really, it doesn't matter what theosophy says. If it doesn't agree with what we're formulating, we have diversity, we have friction. So, you know, we're all students here trying to work through this material plane. And we're being told that electromagnetic osmosis, we sort of affect everyone. you know, that's why a group, shared ideas, you know, electromagnetic connection. Yes.
It is jumping ahead to the next section, but in
you're
the,
not allowed.
Well, the context is a question, though. We have heard that when karma is expressing itself on the physical plane, it's the last, it's the moving out of the nature of the individual that causes set up in previous life. It may have originally started as a moral fault, a mental fault, but in some life it has to work itself out on the physical. And maybe in the meantime, they have reached a great development in other ways, but karma still has to be exhausted.
It's the idea that there's an array of people before us that are all going in the same direction, but at different speeds, sort of different frequencies. And we're what we do is we try to come in here and develop a frequency that we can communicate. That these ideas are based on the universality of life, the oneness of life, that God principle that exists within us, that Christos, Allah. But that is the basis of our functioning. And we only try through a looking at life in a universal way, able to separate what we see now and what the truth may be. Because we give a wider perspective than what we narrowly have been looking. Not because we want to be that way, is we have been trained. And we are good students, all of us. We've been trained. But we have to examine, you know, how do we train each other? Through love and affection, like the Dalai Lama says. You know, that communication, love. Compassion, you know, that becomes the teaching, the Bhagavad Gita, the creation of karma. That's what the Bhagavad Gita is about. It's about the creation of karma and how not to create adverse karma. Just live in this place, and it's in your mind. But you know, that's a discipline.
Hart brings out the idea that sometimes it seems as though things come to us through the actions of others. But it's really the result of our own interaction with others in previous lives.
Yeah.
Well, that seems to point out to us that our words are very important. Because they not only have effect on us, but the wrong kind of word or even an encouraging word may lead another individual to set up causes which they suffer or benefit from, but in return we will experience the results of that also in the future. So we have to be very watchful of how we relate to others. You know, we are our brother's keeper.
Well, that's perhaps the essence of knowing someone, is being able to sit and talk and be, you know, and converse. You know, that we've been together before. If you want to, we've been together before in other ways and other influences. And you come together again and again to keep these ideas alive. And the basis of this idea is karma. And it's very simple to understand. Action and reaction. Thought, word, and deed. Your thoughts are the basis of your actions. So, there it goes. You know the truth now. What are you going to do?
Okay, karma penetrates all of our actions in this current incarnation. Does Blavatsky and Judge say anything about a method, a process, a practice whereby one can infer from the conditions and circumstances, predilections, tendencies, in brief, the whole array of one's existence, and to retrofit your incarnation? For instance, an engineer can look at an advanced technology device and figure out, based on what they know about physics and mechanics and so forth, and figure out how it was designed. So is there something in the writings where they even pose the possibility or engage the question, looking at your life, can you infer what your prior circumstances were, what karma you are working through? The reason why I'm asking the question is that without a method or a technique to do that, theosophy is really an occult science in the most literal sense. I mean, the opening part of the handout compared the Judeo-Christian God and the relationship that one has to this God as being one that's opaque. He's out here, he's mysterious, he's arbitrary, you're here, God can do whatever. The whole relationship is just not workable, and it's not helpful, at least the way it was portrayed here. So,
well,
is there anything in the writing that addresses how one can get a grip on one's previous karma and infer it from the present circumstances of your life? Because without, it seems to me, that without some assistance and insight and guidance in that, then how is theosophical thinking and theosophical living that much different from, say, a Christian?
Yeah, well, I think we forget to look outside of us for examples of how we see the exemplary life. And it's a life of discipline, a life of simplicity, a life of controlling one's desires, a simple life.
I'm just curious if I'm encouraged by that, and I see wisdom in what you're saying, but I was specifically asking about something in the writings. I could be totally off, and you could say, no, there's nothing in the writings that you've come across that addresses my question, if my question is clear. Maybe it's not clear.
Well, maybe, perhaps it's not clear. It's just that the idea of reincarnation, is that what the basis
of this is? No, I'm asking for a specific instance where a person who's confronted with a difficult life, and they're trying to live honorably, mindfully, and so forth, it would be helpful and insightful to be able to reason from your current circumstances or figure out what your prior karma and so forth was. It is assumed that all of these resistant, inexplicable, challenging aspects is karma from another incarnation.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you get into that karmic effect from the other and engage it? It seemed like it would be helpful
to be
in living your life.
To be or to not to be. Be present. Don't be somewhere else. Be present. Right here, right now, is when the universe is being created. Now. Not what was or not what will be. It's what's now. And that is what we're talking about, is what is now.
But what is now can be symbolic. We can use analogy. We can use correspondences. In the moment now, as we're reflecting, that the trick, in quotes, is metacognition. That in the moment, we're able to say, whoa, here's this effect coming at me. try to find an analogy in the moment that makes sense. And the trust issue is that whatever's coming to us now is actually an echo of what is before. Don't have to worry about, you know, what the exact thing was, but the echo's there. Now, how do we deal with it?
The reality is, whatever is coming to us, we've had a hand in it. It's coming to us because we've been a part of it. And it said that we have gone through every circumstance that we need to learn. It's time for us to move forward. Like, you know, it's being stuck in attachments to the material plane.
There's a pamphlet out there on meditation and concentration, a collection of Mr. Judge's articles, which deals specifically with this issue. And not to minimize what we've done in the past, but the best place to understand karma and why we're here is to understand from day to day, to examine our lives from day to day and trace the causes and effects that follow us through the day. Why are we experiencing each day according to our thinking? Mm-hmm. And in that realization, we get glimpses of a larger sphere, what we might have done over many lives. But that's the value of meditation and concentration, and we would refer anybody who's interested into those articles by Mr. Jones.
Is there a particular name for the pamphlet?
The pamphlets, reincarnation.
Yeah,
you know,
reincarnation.
I'll be concentration. Right?
Concentration and meditation, thank you for that.
Yes.
There's a book, Tibetan Dream Yoga. Its purpose is to explain practices for sleep and for dreaming to change our karmic cycles in our waking life. And they refer to it as our personal reactions, grasping and aversion to things. But they talk about karma as being cyclical. Could you talk about
karma is a wave. It's constantly moving. We're constantly adding to it, taking away from it. You know, we're like in motion, and we're the result of our past. But we are in the moment, and we're deciding how we're creating the future. That's what all the yogas are about. Us creating the future, rather than the impulse. I'm interested in this, I'm interested in that, man. You know, but what's going on? Why are we being like that? Why is this helpful for us?
Could you speak on any specifics from a theosophical perspective about the cycles of karma? Is it from lifetime to lifetime? Can you change the cycle within your lifetime?
Karma is on three planes of manifestation. You know, the mental, psychic, and physical. And, it comes forth. And and everything that comes forth is within that effect, you can see the cause. You can see the conflict. All right? You can see the opposition. So that's what karma is.
Thank you. Karma, well, we need to just say that answers to questions on the ocean of theosophy, which is at the in the library, that this is just a great explanation of all the topics that have been brought up tonight. It's very lucid. We did make some notes. It was in that in chapter 11 of Answers to Questions, is what is really the cause of karma? It is first, last, and all the time action. The whole universe is intelligence. The action of intelligence on all planes produces the effects that we perceive. So there are so many planes and there are so many variables, and but whatever karma comes to us, it is ours. We may have, and probably did, work in concert with others, and often because we don't have the past knowledge, it can seem unfair. I didn't do this, why do I deserve this? Because we don't have the memory. But there are those spiritually advanced souls who do have complete memory of all their past lives. And to them, it's very, the pieces of the puzzle are finally put together. But we're warned that this knowledge, and we're warned not to go to psychics, and that astrology, although interesting, is very, the real science of astrology is still lost. So it's very sketchy. So we can't really handle all of the karma. That knowledge, if we had that knowledge now at our present state, for the great portion of humanity, it would just be, it would be too much of a burden to handle, really.
So then it would seem, since pretty much most of us have no idea the particulars of where our karma is coming from previous lives, and pretty much all of us are at some point wondering, why is this happening to me? Or how did I luck out that good, right? Because I probably don't, right? So step one, it would seem, is accepting the fact that you're not a victim. At least you're trying to figure out, what did I do in the past that now I'm dealing with this? Well, that's step one, because now you're empowering yourself and taking responsibility. And then step two is, well, if it's still here, which it obviously still is, because I'm dealing with something, I don't know the source of it, it's more spiritual to work on this plane with challenges in the physical realm than it is to, you know, somehow spiritually experience or psychically experience previous lives. That's not spiritual work. The spiritual work is using our own power to overcome the challenges. So once we accept that we have the challenges and that they're ours, and we're willing to try to find out what principles are at work and work with those principles, then that's the only way we're going to overcome the challenges, not by academically learning what the source of them is. So by the time we have overcome the challenges, A, we probably won't care as much as what happened in previous life. And maybe we're taking a step forward, so that, you know, that's just one more step along the path. Eventually we're going to know everything anyway. But we just wanted to finish that with, can't even remember.
Well, just going along with that, when the lesson is learned, the necessity ceases and it's no longer an issue because we know it. Just like if we know geometry or some language and we really have mastered it, then we don't feel uncomfortable in situations that we used to feel uncomfortable in. Just follow up?
Yeah, this is what we're thinking. And in the Western world, if someone is seeing a psychologist, you know, on and everybody's into the one life gig, a huge step forward for a patient of a psychologist, we've heard, we're not psychologists ourselves, but is once the psychologist can get you just to accept the problem as yours, rather than denying the problem as yours and feeling like a victim, that is such a huge step, because it empowers you then to fix it. If I caused it, I can fix it. If somebody else did it to me, why should I be able to, you know,
yeah, not to denigrate psychologists, but
No, it's the same. It's just taking responsibility, whether or not you believe in reincarnation.
No, they have their place, of course, but we have all the psychology and the philosophy, if we work it. It's all here in the Bhagavad Gita and in our library and in the ocean. And sometimes we do need a little help in order to apply it and see it. We sometimes need somebody outside of ourselves as a mirror. That's, you know, but we just wanted to touch on the discussion we were having about deformity. A deformed person may be very happy and may be just a joy and a gift and very intelligent and very funny and very accepting. And we can learn so much from people like that. We know when we were in school, there were very few children that were mainstreamed at that point. But we've seen over the years the acceptance, and that is one of the greatest joys in our life, is to see that come pretty much full circle now, where there's such acceptance of differences. And there are advanced souls, of course, that incarnate into those circumstances. And it's a lesson for that being who is, you know, going through that condition, and the parents as well, and anyone else in the family, that it's a lesson. Yes.
And sometimes what we see in such a life among the person who has the challenges and the caretakers in the home and community is a degree of serenity where there's an acceptance. They know what the scenario is. They get it, probably far more than any of us could, looking at it. But on the other hand, they detach from that, and they are in the moment celebrating whatever possibility of uplift and goodness as can be. And therein lies the very ancient teachings of the Gita, which are now being incorporated into modern Western psychology.
Yes, and psychology and science were tapping into potential that was lost. These folks were largely shut away in homes and either ignored or worse, mistreated. And we don't see that so much anymore, we don't think. I'm sure, I mean, there's all kinds of conditions out there, of course, horrible conditions, but these are all lessons. They're all lessons. Yes.
Well, if we use such simple ideas, such as how to weigh 5 pounds of water in a jar, well, ordinarily it would take to put the jar on a scale and weigh the water. Wrong. We have to know what the weight of the bottle is in order to know how much the water is. Oh, you're saying it's a school. Life is a school. We're here to learn. And once we get the idea that we're here to learn, then we are participating, actually actively participating in the evolutionary nature of anywhere in the universe. So we don't put a negative mark on the term. I want to know how. And here in this room we give out certain ideas. But I'll think about that. There is the law of right and wrong, balance and imbalance. Then we become active participants in evolution. So we can't do that if we don't know how we should act, who we are, what we are. And here in these rooms, those fundamental ideas begin
It is desire. Behind will stands desire. And if we have gotten a less than wonderful education, as long as we have normal, perhaps even slightly less than normal capacity, if we have a strong desire to learn, we can learn. We can overcome that. Because that's karma too. Maybe we were, you know, it talks about in the reference about all these splendid, wonderful things that people get, and that can be a detriment. You know, money, travel, clothes, finest education, and it may not produce, it may be a detriment. So there was a hand in the back. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, you had your hand up for a while.
It's an extension of a previous question. A person wanted to know if there were any specific examples of cycles of karma or how it operates in cycles. And just as a general principle, cycles, reincarnation, karma cannot be separated. It's all one law.
It is. It is. Yes.
And it is beyond the scope of this class to go into it, but we would invite anyone who is interested to read chapter 14, which we're coming to in a few weeks, on cycles. And it goes into specifically some of those karmic cycles that affect us as nations, as races, as individuals, reincarnating civilizations, all the different aspects, up, including the universe as well. So it's a huge subject.
It is a huge subject, and we must always remember we are karma. It is not an outside force. It's held in abeyance for us, but we created it. It's not an outside force. We are karma. Yes.
I was intrigued with the contribution about determining the weight of 5 pounds of water with the scale. And in order to do that accurately, you would have to know the weight of the bottle. For me, that's a very intriguing, and I want to spend more time with it, engaging meditation on karma, because in that example, karma would be the weight of the bottle. And the lesson learned that he's saying the school of life teaches us would be the balance of the scale. Okay, so in order to understand the balancing act, one would have to then know the weight of the bottle. I think the analogy is very insightful, and thank you for it.
Okay, thank you. It's a good, interesting meditation because it just is. We can all think about it. Yes.
Well, one of those things that helps us understand the weight of the body,
okay.
The weight of the karma, is that statement of Mr. Judge's in Karmic Aphorisms, that there is no karma unless there is a being to make it and feel its effects. So if we really want to understand the weight of karma, we have to understand ourselves, psychically, spiritually, because each one of us will experience the joys and difficulties in life to a different degree, depending on what we bring to it. We can all listen to the same concert, but because of our inner psychic and moral and mental nature, that concert may put us to sleep, or it could be the most beautiful experience we ever had. So we are the weight of the bottle that we have to understand in order to judge our experience.
We are the weight of the bottle. And can we break the bottle? And is that free us? Yes.
Well, in that example, if the water is the pure lesson to learn regardless of the particulars, but the lesson in principle to learn, actual bottle or the jar, the weight of it, the thickness of it, is how much of your here and now personality are you putting into it. If you take yourself out of it and make that jar as light as possible, then you probably get a more accurate assessment of what the principle is going on.
And water is like very sensitive, and we could look at that as our emotional nature, which we're always trying to stay on the beam, and sometimes it's more difficult than others. Also, it has correspondences with the astral, and so that's the ocean, in a sense, that we're immersed in. Yes.
Well, our society, the teachings that take place in society mention the word forgiveness of sins. Everybody's heard that. And the error in that is, well, my sins are forgiven, but what about those I have injured in the process? No one seems to think along those lines.
Well, we would hope that someone, a student that is struggling to, you know, to master the teachings, or religious, you know, sincere religious people as well, that they are really concerned about what they've done and how to do better and how to repent in a way, not to repent to some outside God, but to make amends with our fellow human beings, that sort of repentance, and to raise the whole, because we do, we raise up the whole, all of the whole world when we, if we can just conquer one fault per lifetime, we're doing great. We're really on our way. Yes. Oh, yeah, right here.
In the anticipation of the talk on Albert Schweitzer this Sunday, there's a particular quote of his which we think is relevant here, and that is, one can be a sinner and yet still live the life of a saint. Think about it.
Yeah, well, there's perfection is something that's far off. So there are people that have done wonderful things, and then maybe they weren't perfect. Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry. You had your hand up?
Did I?
Yes, you did. Yes,
yes I did.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
I was raising a question in terms of page 92.
Sure.
And really, the whole page is taken up with her mind is involved in all of this. And then there's electromagnetic currents that are set up. Talks about a photographic imprint that's made at death and then at rebirth, and all through electrical and magnetic osmosis. We certainly see the effects, or we think we see it, but we don't really see these ideas in manifestation. We don't recognize them.
Yeah, it's all around us. The whole universe is electromagnetic. It's dynamic, and it's explosive at times as well. And that's why we have cataclysms, which we're not doing tonight, but but they are. It's our thoughts, our actions. It's the thinker and the actor. It causes everything. Everything is dynamic, and it's like a photographic plate, which we don't use so much anymore, but most of us are old enough to, you know, be familiar with it. And you know, an impression is made on a sensitive plate. And yes, sir.
I've heard the term that Mother Nature is very, very happy with those who help her.
Oh, okay.
In this evolutionary thing. And that it didn't matter. But his purpose is to help nature in her evolutionary duties.
That's, yeah, that's one of the great points about theosophy that's not spoken of. One of the many points that's not really discussed so much in general is, you know, to help nature and work on with her. And because we're all connected very intimately. Yes.
Well, but what connects us are these ideas. These ideas that are universal in their application. And that it's, you know, we've created all of this that we see before us.
Right.
That's so really hard to imagine.
The whole phantasmagoria we have created.
We're responsible for.
And we are.
In some way, shape, or form. And, you know, and, so what we see right now is for our opportunity to keep on moving forward, or with more understanding, with more knowledge. You know, the less of a feeling of separateness.
In the back.
Well, it's hard for us to imagine it because we still carry with us the idea that we are these personalities. Philosophy, even in the ocean, even before we came to these ideas of reincarnation, we were introduced and was repeated that we are spiritual beings, that in our nature we are a lot more powerful and creative than we appear to be. Incarnation, involvement in life for most of us puts a veil over it until we begin to rediscover try to bring it into activity again.
Yes, well, there's involution and evolution, and first we need to get involved, and then we need to evolve, and many of us are still, in many ways, in the involution. We're still stuck in the mire, and we don't, you know, with materialism, and we don't really see the whole picture because we're so concerned with success and position and whatnot. Yes.
Bayard de Chardin famously said that we are spiritual beings seeking a material existence rather than the other way around, which is an interesting meditation in itself. And in terms of our connectedness to each other and to all things, it's helpful for me, now that we're sharing this, to look at the karma involved in one sense of disconnection to each other and certain things.
Thank you. And with that, we just want to mention that this Sunday the doors open at 10:30, meeting is at 11. Dr. Albert Schweitzer, who was a polymath, they used to say Renaissance man, but that seems to fall by the wayside. Polymath is probably much more descriptive, though. And meeting is adjourned.